Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear of the Sword and the Step Back. Have a really fun show today. I was supposed to be a Bucks preview, but some things fell through last minute. Couldn't really record a Bucks preview the way I was hoping to. So this is why we plan ahead, and this is why I usually have something kind of waiting. Today, Scott Rafferty from The Step Back, from Rolling Stone, from the Sporting News, I talked to him about two articles he wrote. One is about how great LeBron's passing has been, and then he wrote another one about how Curry and Durant are killing teams without even dribbling the ball or even having to do anything with the ball in their hands. They're just moving and creating chaos. Both are relevant because obviously this is a Cavs podcast, and the Cavs are so close to playing the Warriors, and that just seems more important than maybe just kind of talking about some minutia. So no Bucks preview today, unfortunately. We'll have tomorrow a look back at Tuesday's game and a little bit about Kevin Love and his injury. Of course, he's not going to play tonight against the Bucks, and kind of the Cavs are Carter Rodriguez, who's been on the show, who is a great writer of it for this sort of wrote a really, really good piece you should go read about the Cavs' depth issue and how it might really be an issue based on where we're at the moment and what this team really has with Birdman being hurt, with Kevin Love not being hurt, and, you know, everyone else they have in this team. So, Scott Rafferty today, if there's a little, there are a few things on this show that sound like I'm referencing Thursday show. It's originally supposed to go up tomorrow, but last minute change of plans. Got to post it today. Hope you enjoy. Scott's great. Make sure you to follow him on Twitter at CrabDribbles. Find all of his work. It's great. You will always learn something when he writes. And hope you enjoy today's show.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome, everyone, back to Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and The Step Back. Today, I actually have an editor from The Step Back. He also writes for The Sporting News and Rolling Stone. It's Scott Rafferty, a.k.a. at CrabDribbles on Twitter. Scott, how's it going?
Good, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to have you on the show. I'm very excited to talk about some very detailed basketball stuff. We haven't done that in a while. And there's a reason we have you on, and that's because you wrote a piece, two pieces that we're going to talk about. One about LeBron James, one about Durant and Curry, who Cavs fans know the Cavs are finally going to play in a couple days here. And for me, at least, Scott, before we get into the articles, the season's actually going to feel real to me after I see those two teams play, because I feel like I've been waiting for it and just waiting for it. And because games like against the Cavs have played against the Raptors and the Celtics have been fun, but it's Golden State, and like I feel like I need to see this for everything to kind of turn into another level.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. I would just say that the matchups between them last season didn't go very well.
Not at all.
So I wouldn't put too much stock into it. But at the same time, like this is the matchup you want to see. Like we want to see, I think a lot of people want to see the Cavs or Warriors in the finals again. So it's always nice to have kind of a preview and see how they match up with Kevin Durant and things like that. So it's always fun.
Yeah, and things obviously can change between when these two teams play. And they play two times, and they're within like 3 weeks of each other. I'm pretty sure. I think the second one's on January 16th. So it's not a lot of time between games. And it's not like we're going to see them right before the playoffs. So they're going to go away from each other, assumably, when they meet in the finals again. It'll be several months between when they played. But the LeBron piece you wrote, it's about his passing ability and how he's finding guys at just such a high level, especially this year. Before we get into some of the video clips and stuff, can you just tell the listeners what exactly you were looking for to write about in this piece?
Yeah, what I find interesting about LeBron, of many things, is that he's at a stage in his career at 32 years old, 14th season. You'd expect him to kind of not be the player that he used to be. And he proved last season in the finals that he's still very capable of being the best player in the world, and he still is. But I think it's interesting how his game is starting to change, because this is he's averaging 25 points this season, but that which is still one of the best marks in the NBA. But it's basically a career low for him. And his 17.8 shot attempts per game is also a career low, basically. And his assists are up. So that in on its surface showed me that he's kind of changing his approach this season. And when I watched video of it, very detailed video of it, it kind of looks to me that sometimes he doesn't even look to score. He just knows that he can use his threat of being a 27-point-per-game scorer for his career to basically bend defenses in ways where he can easily set guys up. And I think what helps him is that this roster has been constructed around him so perfectly that he can finally do that and kind of play that role that he never has before, but now he really wants to. Like, he's always been more comfortable, I think, as a distributor and not necessarily just as a pure scorer.
I think that's 100% right. I mean, I think going back to his first tenure with the Cavs, I remember, I think it was actually a game against the Raptors where he could have tied the game or won the game with a layup, but he was there's two guys at the rim, and he passed out to, like, Daniel Marshall, of all people, or something in the corner, and, like, he defended it after the game. He's like, that's just how I play, and I think you're right. Like, this is exactly how he's probably always wanted to play. I think he couldn't do it with the first Cavs, because if you go back and look at some of those teams, the talent levels were not great. With those Heat teams, especially near the end, he was doing so much because Wade got beat down a little bit, and they needed him to kind of be that guy, and it just worked for them. With this Cavs team, because of Kyrie, because of Kevin Love, I think he can do much of those stuff. But I think even further than that, like, Channing Frye is, like, the perfect LeBron role player.
Because
he's going to be behind the three-point line, and he's going to be there to just shoot threes. And I think you're right. I think the roster, as it's constructed, most of the time is kind of built for LeBron to drive, scare defenses, and make them pick between letting him dunk or letting him, or giving him just enough space that he needs to find a guy in the corner or at the top of the key.
And I think that's a very promising sign for how his career is going to continue. Because, again, you expect him to be not nearly the athlete he once was, and for that to impact his game, especially because he puts so much pressure on teams by driving to the basket. But the fact that he can kind of play at this level that he is right now, because it seems, honestly, like he does kind of coast through the regular season, which by his standards is crazy, because he's nearly averaging a triple-double. So it's just like, that's just who he is. But it's kind of just easy for him to do the things he's doing right now because everything's kind of fit into place. And I could see him kind of doing this for another 2 or 3 years, because the game is just so easy for him.
Yeah. I think he could, as he gets older, I think this is will be a lot of what he does. I think even if he plays until he's 38, I think some of what he's doing now in terms of making reads, it may have to become him doing it out of the post, because he just won't be able to be as explosive off the dribble. But he can still make those type of reads. I think that's going to be the last thing that goes. Like, I think his ability to pass, but after his, you know, his leaping ability goes, after his a willingness to be engaged all the time, I think that certainly is going to be the last thing goes, his passing ability. I think, let's look at it this way, though. There is some critique, I think, of that is fair of the Cavs, that they do maybe run things that are sort of simple, and I think this year they've done a better job of diversifying the offense. Are there areas you see they could still get better around what this LeBron is doing?
It's tough because of what they did in the finals. Like, I look at, it was very isolation heavy for them, especially down the last three games, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people try and push that away because it's not necessarily the most efficient way to play basketball, but it works for them. And I think when you have someone like LeBron, you can afford to install a really simple offense because it can be so effective. So one of the other things I wrote about this season was that the Cavs have been they've begun running 3-1 pick and rolls more often, which is LeBron as the ball handler and Kyrie as the screener. And it's not that they want it for Kyrie to roll to the basket or anything, because that would be crazy. But he basically pops to the 3-point line in the hope of them forcing a switch. And, like, that's really easy, because then after that, if a point guard switches on LeBron, he gives up the ball, immediately goes down to the post, and you've got to decide between doubling him or, you know, letting him score a layup, basically, because he is one of the best, he's one of the better post-up scorers in the league. And, like, there's nothing really hard about that in terms of a system or the X's and O's behind it, but it's just so effective because they can put a weapon at every single position and basically every single time down the court create an open or high quality shot because of what they're doing. So I don't necessarily think they have to make it more complicated or anything like that. And the fact that they did so well playing very heavy isolation basketball in the finals kind of makes me think that it's okay. Like, it's fine in the long run. It's fine in the playoffs. And they should be fine in the finals if they get there again.
Yeah, I think if I have one area where I think it could be a little bit better, I think it is Kyrie. Like, I love Kyrie, and I'm a big believer in how good he is. But his assists are a little bit down this year, and I think when he gets the ball, because of how good he is as an isolation scorer, and this sort of hits on what you're doing, it almost feels like kind of dumb to tell him to do something different or suggest that he do something different because he is one of the best one-on-one scorers in the league. But he is sort of a black hole in that regard. Like, if he gets the ball, he will make some passes and set other guys up. He's averaging about 5 assists a game, but against 2.5 turnovers, so he's not like exactly an elite distributor. They don't need him to be because of LeBron, but he is just going to shoot when he gets the ball most of the time. And I think when he takes mid-range shots and it's in isolation, I don't love that shot. When he takes it with LeBron in the pick and roll, and I don't know how often exactly he does it, but that to me feels like the worst possible outcome is Kyrie taking a mid-range jumper when he's running a pick and roll with LeBron, because he's not going to get fouled there. We all know it's one of the least efficient shots in basketball besides like the long two. And that's sort of what I think defenses would like. I kind of would like to see Kyrie maybe be a little bit more inclined to move the ball around a little bit more. But that is such like a small critique for him because, again, he's just insanely good at scoring out of isolation and with those 1-3 pick and rolls that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think he's really interesting in particular because I think people have got onto him a lot in the past about him trying to be a pure point guard, right? And he's not. He's not a pure point guard. He's one of the best scorers in the NBA. And going back, like his isolation numbers this season, they make up nearly 20% of his scoring. He's averaging 1.22 points per possession, which ranks in the 94th percentile, which is just, I mean, that's nuts. And with LeBron being basically the point guard on the team, I think they can afford for him to basically just be a scorer or be more of a scorer than a facilitator. But it's a fine line. And the point about him taking mid-range jump shots is interesting to me because I wonder if you just let him do that, even though it's not the most efficient shot, because it's a way for him to find a rhythm because it's a shot he's comfortable with. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is a fine line and it's interesting, but Kyrie is also one of those interesting players where like he can get a shot off anywhere. So do you just let him do whatever he wants kind of thing?
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's like almost feels like a waste to critique him, and he can just get his shot anywhere. I mean, I don't know if there is a team with a point guard that necessarily could, I think, slow him down all game. You know, like I just don't know if there's a guy actually could do that because offense is just something that I think ends up winning out over defense, because playing defense, especially if he's going against other elite point guards, if you're playing defense full go, it's really, really hard to play full go on the other end as well. You know, yeah. It's like if it's with Curry, the Cavs can hunt down Curry because, A, he's a decent defender, but he's not exactly an elite defender, right? Like, he's a solid defender, but you can push him and attack him in the pick and roll. If they're playing the Raptors, Kyle Lowry has to do so much on offense that I think over a 7-game series, really hard for him to keep up that effort.
It is. And I think I always hesitate to critique players who carry such a load offensively when people point out how they're not performing defensively, because effort is one thing, right? Like, you feel like no matter what, a player should be able to give effort on both ends of the court. But like James Harden, for example, does so much for the Rockets that I feel like it's hard to expect him to go all out on defense, because very few players can do that. One of whom is LeBron. LeBron in his prime, like LeBron in the finals, just did it all. And that's what makes him one of, if not the greatest player of all time, because he can do everything on offense and then he can shut down a team defensively. Those players are just so rare that, because it just puts so much pressure on you. And you're right, like teams like the Raptors, like DeMar DeRozan isn't going to single-handedly carry them through a series against the Cavs. They're going to need everyone to do everything. They need him on defense and offense. And that's one of the things that's just exhausting about the Cavs, because you have to put your best defender on LeBron. And how many teams have two elite wing defenders so they can put a second one on Irving and then be able to stop Love, who's playing out of his mind right now? Like, it's just, they just have so many options.
I think the Warriors are probably the only team that really comes to mind, right? I mean, that sort of is telling.
Yeah, they're just going to steamroll through. If healthy, they should just easily make it to the finals again. Because I like the Celtics and everything. I just don't think there isn't a team in the East that has the weapons to match up with them. But yeah, you're right. The only team that seems like they could is the Warriors.
Yeah. I think the East is interesting because I think if Toronto went out and got a guy, like an elite power forward, that would make them more interesting. I still would probably pick the Cavs, but if they got Paul Millsap, I think that becomes more interesting. Boston, I don't think, rebounds well enough because they have all the guys they can throw at Kyrie. Like, they have Avery Bradley, they have Marcus Smart, you have Jay Crowder, like, you have guys that you can put on LeBron and, like, slow them down, but they're not a good rebounding team, and if you're trying to beat the Cavs with Love, interest, and Thompson, you need to do well on the boards and control the game and control the tempo, and I don't think Boston can necessarily do that, but yeah, I think you're right. I think Warriors are the only team. I think also we should call the idea that a guy who's carrying such an offensive burden maybe shouldn't be critiqued as much for their defense, the James Harden rule, just because he's like the perfect example of it.
He is.
Like, I could care less how much defense he's playing right now. I could care less.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with Westbrook. There is a fine line with it. Again, it's the matter of Westbrook does so much offensively, and he does have lapses on defense, but it's some of the lapses are so annoying because it just seems a matter of effort or just simple awareness. Those are the ones that are frustrating. But to expect a guy to just shut down, to just be elite on both ends of the floor, it's just so hard. And I think it's just so easy to critique players in that situation when not knowing how difficult it is.
Yeah, 100% agree. But before we move on to the Warriors stuff and how it applies to the Cavs on Christmas Day and then potentially in the finals, where would LeBron rank on your list of best passers in the NBA?
As in NBA right now or all time?
I mean, either one. Either one works for me.
I honestly don't know if it changes my answer either way. I think he's the best passer in the NBA right now. I do. I think some of the videos I pointed out in my article, it's just he's incredible how he sees he can just read the defense. Like, he'll jump up in the air and he can read how defenders are going to react and then put the ball like the one place that they can't get to. And it was Brian Windhorst wrote an article for ESPN a couple weeks ago, I think, on this as well, about LeBron's passing and how he's distributing more than ever before. And a scout, I believe, told him that, like, kids are taught not to jump up in the air and pass. Like, that's just begging for a turnover. Mm-hmm. LeBron does that, and it doesn't even matter because he's on another level. So I think little things like that. I think he's the best passer in the NBA right now. Well, what do you think?
I think he's the best passer in the NBA. I don't think it's really close, to be honest with you. Like, I see him the more so than any other star player, so that sort of probably taints my answer a little bit. But the other night, they're playing the Grizzlies on Tuesday, or last week, this would be last week, and he makes his sidearm, like, casual backhanded bounce pass to Tristan Thompson, I think, and it just looked like something he did, like a kid does the first time he learns how to properly make a bounce pass. Like, he's that skilled on these, like, absurd passes. Yeah. Or, like, there's the thing where, like, he'll drive and he knows that the guy's going to be in the corner and he doesn't even have to look, and he wraps that bounce pass over the line and it sneaks to the guy. Like, it's just absurd that he can do that stuff. It's absurd.
It is. And I think that goes back to how year one of this team, I think anytime three superstars come together, there's going to be problems and it's going to be difficult. And that's why LeBron took on such a big load. And I think last year, Kyrie's injury at the start of the season kind of set them back because they couldn't really establish a rhythm with the three of them. Whereas this season, like, everyone's healthy. They all started the season. They all know their role now. And I think it really is. This roster has been constructed around LeBron. He knows that there's going to be three shooters on the court around him every single time, sometimes four, and he knows where they're going to be. So it's just a matter of, if I see your defender slide over, I know exactly where to put the ball because I know exactly who's going to be there.
Yeah, 100% agree. Who comes close all time for you, and even or in the NBA right now? Like, who are guys that at least you think are on that similar level?
I have no clue. I mean, it's got to be like Steve Nash is obviously up there. You got Jason Kidd, you got Magic, things like that. But to be honest, like, I didn't watch enough of them. I haven't seen enough of them to really compare because I've seen a lot more LeBron. But it's hard for me to see like a 6'8" guy who's this big and this strong and can score this well. And just not, and the way he passes, like, it's hard for me to not give it to him. So I would say he's number one. I don't know if that means as much as other people saying he's number one because I haven't seen as much as the other people, but to me, he's number one.
Yeah, I think if it's looking at guys all time, the only guys that I've watched enough of, because I went back, I went back and watched as much as I could and found on YouTube of them, it's Magic and Larry Bird, because I remember the other day, I want to say the Pro Hoops History account, which is, I can't remember the guy's name who runs it, and I feel really bad because he's awesome, and he works for the Sixers now, I think, but he tweeted this pass that Larry Bird made, and I just couldn't believe that Larry Bird actually, like, pulled off this pass. Like, I was, like, shocked that it was, like, an actual thing. It's pretty crazy. But LeBron, I mean, this era, I think, is on his own, but...
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
Your Warriors piece, to turn to that, they're really, really good. But the thing you pointed out in your piece is that Curry and Durant are creating chaos and creating really, really good looks without even dribbling. I mean, just how insanely scary is that for opposing defenses?
It's terrifying. I also think the thing is for me that I still don't think they're scratching the surface of their offensive potential. Ugh. Like, I still think there's things that they can do which would just destroy teams. Like, Curry, Durant, pick and rolls. Like, I haven't seen much of that this season. That is unguardable because the Cavs stopped the Curry, Draymond Green pick and rolls last season by basically putting LeBron on Green so then they could just switch because Draymond Green is not a good post-up scorer. That's like the one part of his game that he's not very good at. So you give Durant that role now, who can also roll to the basket and score. He can roll and find the open shooter on the pass. But he's one of the best post-up scorers in the NBA. So now if you switch that, you've got Kyrie Irving on him, for example, and he's just going to shoot over him all day. So I think, like, I haven't seen very many of those pick and rolls between them. But the stuff like that and then having Curry set screens with Durant off when they're off ball, like, they could just do that all game. And I feel like that's so hard to stop. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, I have no idea either. When I watch the Warriors, I always try to think, subliminally at least, like, how are the Cavs going to defend this? And I don't know. Like, because I think you clearly have to put LeBron on Durant. Like, you clearly have to do that. I don't think you have a choice. I think you're probably putting Kyrie on Clay, and then you're putting some... Or you could go Kyrie on Steph, unless Shumpert's in the game, because I don't think the JR Kyrie thing is really that much of a big deal. So you're kind of at a disadvantage at the guard spots defensively. And then you get up front. I think Thompson, at least against the starting five, at least has to defend Draymond, and I think Love has to go on Zaza. When they go small, I have no idea. I really don't know what to do. If I'm Ty Lue, that's probably going to keep me awake because you want Love and Thompson to be playing, but you probably definitely can't play both of them. You might not be able to play Love because he's probably going to get exposed defensively. And Thompson could struggle too because as much as he's versatile and switchable, there's limits to that. And he didn't really play that well, to my recollection, against Draymond when they went head-to-head at the five last year during the finals.
I don't know either because it was a similar problem last year with people questioning whether or not you go small or you go big against the Warriors. Because if you go small... Like, no one's going to out-small them, really, because that's what they do, and that's where they're at their best. I think you have to just... Like, Tristan Thompson can hurt them on the glass. Like, I think you have to do things like that. If Kevin Love is playing to the level he is right now, that's a huge difference maker, because while he is a problem on defense in those kind of matchups, he can still stretch the floor out and kind of take players to the post if and when there is a mismatch. But there's just... I don't know what the answer is right now, but we also had this problem going into the finals last year. I think everyone had these kind of concerns, and the Cavs kind of find a way to pull it through. So I'm sure there is a way out there. We haven't seen it really yet.
Do you have an idea of what you would do to slow down the Curry Durant off-ball stuff?
I think you have to completely ignore Zaza Pachulia. Like, I think Andrew Bogut is really good at this because he just if there's a guy who can't shoot, he just completely ignores them and, like, disrespectfully backs off of them. It's amazing. And I think you have to kind of do that to Pachulia as well, because if you defend him somewhat honestly by stepping up, it just creates so much space in the around the rim that And then you have to overplay on Durant cutting back door, which means Steph has a chance to get open. And also on the other side of the court, there's Draymond Green and Klay Thompson spotting up for threes. Like, it's just, I think you have to somehow find a way to make Pachulia do more or put him in a position where he's uncomfortable. The problem is that they're going to do the same thing when they go small, because they can just give Draymond Green the ball there, and then he's more capable of putting the ball on the floor and making a play for himself or others. But I think if Pachulia is on the court, you just have to basically completely ignore him. But the thing is, he's a good scorer off of cuts too. So I think one of the problems is if Durant or Curry still get open on those screens, if you help out, he's going to cut to the basket, and they're both good passers, so they're going to find him. But I just think the only solution is to completely ignore him.
I think I agree. I think that makes Love a little bit more interesting on defense, because I think you could maybe have him, you could use him to double guys if they get inside, or like, and just use him as a big, tall person to throw at, you know, Draymond if he gets the ball inside, or if Durant, you know, just throw an extra body there and make it just a little bit harder. Because I think making the Warriors work over a game is going to, like, can matter. You know, like, it doesn't necessarily guarantee you're going to be successful. But I think with the Cavs, because they don't have, you know, a straight-up traditional rim protector this year, because if they play Channing Frye and other certain lineups, like, their defense is kind of going to have some just inherent issues. I almost think effort and correct scheme and just knowing where you have to be is going to matter a lot in that game. And, you know, partially because they're not really playing that hard all the time right now, we haven't seen them do that yet, you know? Like, we've seen them kind of, they're, I believe, the 19th defense in the league or somewhere in that state, and that's fine. It doesn't really matter that much right now. But against the Warriors, if they play at that level, they're going to get roasted probably.
Yeah, but I think what you said is a good point, because the Cavs have quite a few players who are not only capable of playing physically, but they also like to play physical. And I think, especially with guys like Curry and Durant, not that being rough with them is going to mess them up and take them out of their game, but I think, like, the Grizzlies did a pretty good job of this when they beat the Warriors by so much, which I don't think is a reflection on, you know, anything really. But they have big guys, and they pushed the Warriors around, and they were physical, and they fought them through screens and stuff like that. And we saw that again in the finals last year with the Cavs. And I think you can still, like, guys like Love can play in that kind of series because they can be physical and they can make a difference on the boards. It's just a matter of figuring out how to do that and whether or not you can sustain that over seven games. Because adding Durant is just a completely different monster, and it creates so many more problems than Harrison Barnes for obvious reasons. Just winning four games against them out of seven games just seems crazy right now. But we also, again, we thought the same thing last year with the Cavs.
Yeah, I think it's true. When June is obviously different, you know, people could be hurt. I think one thing I really do want to see, and this kind of works it back to LeBron a little bit, I think Channing Frye could be really, really useful against the Warriors small ball lineups. I think the issue is he's not a good rebounder statistically. He's an okay defender. He's not going to protect the rim by any means. But if he can pull Draymond away and put that defense in a little bit of a frenzy, and if you can get away with it for a couple minutes and maybe make the Warriors go back to playing Zaza, or maybe make them go back to playing JaVale, that's a better scenario than, you know, going against a small lineup for however long they want to run it.
So my question would be, would you prefer Frye out there or Love at the center?
Frye's the better shooter.
Yeah.
Love's the better rebounder. I kind of think they're a wash on defense, right? Like, I don't think there's like a way to say that one's necessarily better than the other. I lean Love because of the rebounding and the post-up ability. But if he gets in foul trouble, I think Frye's like a good way to do it. And I don't think, Frye barely played in the finals last year. And I think he has like a lot of use, and he is a rotation player this year. Now that he's, you know, this is his first full year with the Cavs. I think Love certainly, but Frye and LeBron has just been so perfect, and Love, and I could see the Warriors being ballsy enough to sag off Love in a way they might not off of Frye, because there is about like a 3-4% shooting difference between those two guys.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I just looked at this right now. Channing Frye on spot up opportunities this season makes up 33.6% of his baskets. He's averaging 1.58 points per possession, which ranks in the 99.7 percentile. Just nuts. It's absolutely crazy. And he's 7 feet tall or whatever. I just don't know. That's going to be interesting for them, because you're right. Like, they have the luxury of playing a center at times who can stretch the floor out. My only thing is that Love is also a much better post-up scorer than Fry. So I wonder, in certain matchups, like, if you can get the Warriors to switch enough where Klay Thompson is on Kevin Love, like, do you try and exploit that mismatch?
Yeah, I think you do.
Can't do that with Fry, but I know what you mean. Like, that's the thing I like about this Cavs team, because they can get kind of funky with lineups, and they can kind of, especially against every other team that's not named the Warriors, like, you can't stop Fry at center. You can't. And I think the same kind of goes for Love. It's just the Warriors are different.
Yeah. There's certainly, we haven't really seen anything like this, you know? We've never seen anything like this Warriors team. It's just so much talent and so much shooting. For 5 minutes, just in one of the two games in the regular season, I would actually try to play Love and Fry together and see what happens. I don't know if it would work, and I think it'd be a tire fire defensively. But I think I'd want to try it, just because the shooting could really make a difference.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, that's what the regular season is for, right? Especially for teams like the Cavs, who are probably going to get the number one seed in the East, and they've already played the Warriors in the finals. Obviously not this Warriors team, but they know what kind of team they're going to be. So I think that's why you can't put too much stock in these matchups during the regular season, because they're going to try and throw stuff out there just for experiment reasons. So yeah, I would like to see stuff like that. Like, I'm all for Tyronn Lue just doing anything he can during these couple games and just seeing what works, because again, LeBron against the Warriors in the regular season might not be the monster he is in the finals, and that changes a lot. So it's like, try and find different things that could work.
Yeah. And for reference, for as we record this, amongst 5-man lineups, there is the Cavs' fifth most used lineup, which is LeBron, Love, Irving, JR, Fry, has played about 23 minutes together. And it's, cut that little space out because I can't find the point. Okay, there we go, I'm an idiot. It's about 17 points better per 100 possessions together. And there's another one that's like not quite as good. It's about 12 points better per 100 possessions. As a duo, they're not amongst the Cavs' 20 most used 2-man combos. And Fry is actually only used in one of the, you know, most common 2-man combos, excuse me. And there isn't anything with them in the 3-man combos either. So I think that's sort of a little bit telling, just because we're not seeing a lot of them. And I think Lou doesn't like it because defensively it's not great. It's asking to be picked apart in the pick and roll.
Right, it is. And that's the thing. You can get it. The Cavs are good enough on both ends of the court when they really turn up, I think, to kind of make that work against any team in the league except the Warriors. So again, it's like during the Eastern Conference, in the Eastern Conference in the playoffs, like I think they can do things like that, because there isn't really enough teams that can exploit those problems. It really is just the Warriors.
Yeah, and let me ask you this, and then we'll let you go. And I thank you again for coming on. Do you think the Cavs actually need a backup point guard?
Ooh, that's
We talk about this all the time on the show, and I get a question about it every week, and my mind changes about every week.
Yeah, I mean, Deli is good. Like, I think a lot of people underestimate how good he is and how much of an impact he can make on a game. And just having someone who you can roll out last finals, who can just pester guards, be a threat from the three, and then occasionally do stuff in the pick and roll is huge. That's a good question. I think it depends, obviously, because they're gonna play JR and Iman Shumpert, kind of like those backup guard roles, right? Both of whom, if they're knocking down threes, I think that's enough to work with, because they can both get after it on defense. And the offense is going to be running through LeBron for the most part anyway, and maybe even Love in second units, that I think you can make that, you can work with that. That's a tough question, because it's one of those things, again, like I don't think it's necessarily a problem until they get to the finals against the Warriors, and that's when it could really be a problem. But I could also see it working out okay without a backup point guard.
Yeah, I think in the regular season, it's more of a need. I think, like, if you want to limit minutes and you don't want LeBron to play 40 minutes every night, and you don't want Kyrie playing 40 minutes every night, I think it makes sense. I think Mario Chalmers would make a lot of sense. And I also watched them play JR, a lineup of JR, Liggins, Iman Shumpert, Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson the other night, and I couldn't really like watch them run offense at all. It was really hard to watch.
Yeah, well, I think in those situations, like, Love just has to become everything for them. He's got to be like Timberwolves Love, right? When just everything runs through him and he kind of just does everything. Otherwise, it's not really going to work because they just don't. It's in theory, like, you can put him on Shumpert at point guard because he can sort of dribble, he can shoot, and he can play defense. Like, in theory, it's okay. But it's just, I mean, point guard's probably the hardest position on the court to learn because there's just so much to do. So it's so hard to expect someone like that to fill that role. So, yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. I just think, in theory, the combination of LeBron, Kyrie, and Love, and how you can stagger those minutes, I think they should be able to make up for it enough.
Yeah, and I also think because I don't know if you'd like ever have noticed this, but Mo Williams is actually still on the roster, even though he's never coming back. If they just can find a way to get rid of his salary and whatever, if it's they cut him or if they dump him in a trade or something, I think then you just, you know, get a guy for a minimum and hope that guy's just enough. Because Cade Felder hasn't been, like, I think they hoped that Cade Felder would be kind of what we're talking about with them maybe needing one, or at least I'm talking about that. And he's been kind of overwhelmed every minute he's played so far, which has not been much, but like he played against the Clippers and he just looked completely lost.
Yeah, but
rookie, I can't imagine rookie point guards.
Yeah, exactly. I can't imagine being like a 21-year-old rookie point guard being thrusted into immediately being like the backup point guard on the championship team. Like, it's just it's a big load to take. I wonder if they turn to the D League or something. Like, a guy like Quinn Cook, who we know LeBron has ties to, like, that's, it's not necessarily the best option for them, but it could be an option, especially if he's familiar with their system. And again, he knows a few of the players on the roster. Like, that's an option as well, and a cheap one at that. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
The interesting thing about Quinn Cook, and I actually thought they might go this route, and I think it's telling that they didn't, because he played on their summer league team last year. He's on their D League affiliate now, but he's not under their control.
Yeah.
So he's like there, and this isn't like reading the tea leaves a little bit, but it's almost like if they knew something was there or they felt that something was there, I feel like they could have not spent, because they spent $2.5 million to pick Cade Felder. Like, they had bought a pick, and if you thought Quinn Cook was something, I feel like you, even if you thought there was a chance he was better, like, $2.5 million is like kind of a lot to buy a guy who you're gonna pick near the end of the second round. So I don't know. I kind of wonder why they didn't. I've asked that, and they've kind of just been like, you know, we thought Felder was better. That's kind of been the answer I've gotten. But I wonder if there's something more there that they're skeptical of. Because I like Quinn Cook as well, and I know, you know, Chris Reichert, you know, someone that writes for the Step Back, and I've had the show, and then you obviously know, he's a big fan of Quinn Cook, and he's like, this guy can play in the NBA.
Yeah, I haven't seen as much as of Quinn Cook over the last couple of years as he has, because he follows the D-League much closer than I do right now. But he, I mean, Quinn Cook's averaging 21 points a game in the D-League. He's a good pick-and-roll player. He can knock down threes. You know, he's always been a part of good teams, going back to Duke and everything like that. So I think, like, as far as the experience goes, I think he has it. And it may not be a bad idea to just give him a shot and see what he's capable of.
I'm right there with you. Well, Scott, thank you for coming on. Is there anything you want to tease, and where can people find you on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm at Crab Dribbles. All my work is on Sporting News, The Step Back, and Rolling Stone. That's about it right now. But yeah, I really appreciate you having me on. It was a lot of fun, and hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah, you have an open invitation to come back whenever. So we'll be back. Listeners will be back tomorrow with another show. The Cavs, obviously, just like last week, they played two games last week against the Grizzlies in a row. They're playing two games against the Bucks in a row. That's super weird, but we're going to recap both those games tomorrow. So thanks to Scott, for Chris, for myself, and for Lockdown Cavs, for Scott. We'll talk to you tomorrow.